You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is my interview with the writer and director for 9 Days, Edson Oda.
You are being considered for the amazing opportunity of life. Selected, you will have the chance to be born in a fruitful environment where you can grow, develop, and accomplish.
Am I dead?
I wouldn't say you're alive or dead.
Are you the boss?
I would say a cog in the wheel.
How long is this process?
If you make it until the end, 9 days.
Your senses will become unbearably sharper and stronger. It's your new beginning. You'll never remember me or anything else that happened in this place. But you will still be you.
Every single day, someone hurts someone else. Every single day, someone takes someone else's life.
Why are you focusing on that?
Why are you not focusing on that?
You've been here a few days, but you've lived every second.
Are you afraid?
Of what?
Nine days.
Edson, how you doing today?
Good. Nice
good.
To meet you, Matthew.
Really, really great to have you here, especially for this really miraculous and transcendent film. I saw it at the world premiere at Sundance. Feels like eons ago since I saw it there. I'm sure you're really, really happy to know that it's finally being widely released now and that people are going to finally get a chance to experience it. But going back, where did this idea come from? Because it's surely one of the most unique ideas for a movie I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, I think it comes a lot, the word at least, the creation of this word comes a lot from like me going through like difficult times and going through some struggles, you know, and losing perspective of, you know, what's in front of me. And I think you raised the question in my mind, like what, you know, rather than just like seeing things like they're not here or not graspable as a goal, what if this is the goal, you know? And just challenging me to think like about, you know, this reality, this world where we already, you know, achieved a goal of being here. And and then I think that there was an exercise to just say, okay, so this, if this is the goal, how can I, you know, take advantage of this moment? How can I, you know, enjoy more? How can I, and I think the concept of this pre-life existence come from that.
Yeah, so in choosing to examine pre-existence, you know, when I'm watching the movie for the first time, I'm thinking to myself, okay, 9 days, 9 months to make a baby. Maybe that's it. No, that can't be right. Because as you said, pre-existence, it predates all of that. So in examining that part of it, like where did the idea, the time frame of 9 days come from then?
It came like, I know the number nine is like, so it's such a strong number. Right? There's so many meanings. It's kind of magical in its own way. But I never thought as that, like, this is nine because of, you know, this.
Yeah.
Because as you can see, like 9 months to, you know, to be born, or nine in terms of lucky things, or nine. Like I talked to, like, I've been doing research, and it's interesting how much you find about the number nine. But I don't want to, I know there's some, you know, magic about this number, but I want to leave, you know, it open for people just to, so you can just read your version of the number nine. What do you think nine is?
In doing like research for this project and reading, I'm sure, other material and coming up also with your own ideas for it, have you firmly cemented on what you believe pre-existence to be, or is there another version of it that you also like, another interpretation that you like?
Interesting. Yeah, no, that's an interesting question, you know, because I don't think like 9 days is literal at all, and mm-hmm. in the sense that I see it pretty much as like a metaphor, you know, and, mm-hmm. and metaphor in a way that, you know, anyone, no matter like the faith or the beliefs, they could just interpret into their own values and their own beliefs. And I never wanted to be as, you know, because I think I never thought about it in a sense like, oh, this is before now our existence here, what really happens. And I'm not sure about what happens. And I have some kind of but that's why I don't see it as like my vision of what happened. You know?
Sure. Okay. I get that. Totally. Mm-hmm. The house that Will stays in, it has these old school television sets, VHS tapes. He writes on paper. He watches stuff on a projector. You know, we're living in an age where everyone's using digital screens. Yeah. Why the decision to go with older technology to really give this house the personality that it does?
Yeah, I think for first reason, like it feels more connected to the nostalgia, you know, mm-hmm. going to it, there's some kind of magic, you know, attached to things that are like VHS or tube TVs, or I think mostly because they also correspond to like a period of my life that I would never have again, you know. You see it as something that is kind of it was so great, it's so magical, you know.
Yeah.
And very cinematic too, but also because I see Will, you know, I imagine that he died like in the 80s, more or less, mm-hmm. and then he got imprisoned in that period of time. So the house represents that period.
Interesting, because I was going to ask you how Will got his position. Was he appointed mm-hmm. by someone? You said it's like a prison. Is that like kind of him atoning for what he did in his life on Earth?
Yeah, he applied to the job. No, it's on the internet or something.
Yeah, right. But,
yeah, it's interesting because I never explained. And I think he doesn't know too, like how he ends up. But he just he wondered, and he thought like, why did they get? And I think some you know ideas that came to his mind is okay. I've been alive. I'm one mm-hmm. of the few here, and everyone, all the other candidates as well, they're being alive too. So I think he thinks like, oh, okay, so there has to do with that. And also he knows that, okay, I went through a lot of, you know, problems while I was alive. I went through pain. I went to, you know, some bad experience. Maybe mm-hmm. that make me skillful enough or knowledgeable enough to just make selections for making sure that people like me maybe don't go there, you know. So in his head, I think he feels like, oh, I can't choose people like me because I fail. So who else better than me to just make sure that I don't send people like me, which I don't know if it's the case, you know, mm-hmm. That he can't choose people like him.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Christina Yerling-Biro, host of the podcast Pop Culture Confidential. Join me as I go way behind the scenes with some of the most influential people in entertainment and media. Hear actors such as Succession's Brian Cox talk about his favorite characters to play.
There always has to be a mystery. The audience have to be in a situation where they want to know what's going on.
Meet studio execs like Pixar chief Pete Docter and learn his secret on how he makes us cry.
Emotion is our first language.
And so many others who are defining popular culture, from Obama speechwriter David Litt to Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi.
We don't often think about food politically, or we don't want to, but it really is.
Join me. Search for Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of very interesting levels of interpretation and a lot of backstory that the audience can fill in for themselves, which leads me to wonder, is there any interest at all in further exploring this world that you've created for 9 days, maybe in another medium outside of film even?
Oh, interesting. That's an interesting question. Yeah. Maybe a prequel, like the...
Yeah, or a book or something.
I love to see a play of it. Like, a play where you can see and you can play projections and you can...
Yeah.
I think that would be very interesting. Not necessarily, it could be like, it should be like Will, could even be another character, another, time frame. But I thought play would be very interesting to see.
And there's a lot of play elements also within the movie. We have like the scenes where he recreates the memories and they're created on like this soundstage. Mm-hmm. Where was the house itself, where was it built? Was that on a soundstage did you guys? I kind of figured it had to have been, because I was like, there's no way they went out to the desert to do this.
I wouldn't call a soundstage because we couldn't hear so many airplanes, flying by. I would call like a stage a warehouse or something like that. And then we built there inside. And then we built the facade of the house in the desert.
Yeah.
Exterior shots, mm-hmm. which was like very, very, impressive, just seeing that, thing in the middle of the desert.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of like the cast for this movie too, I mean, mm-hmm. you're working with some really prolific actors and then also actors who I think, in some cases may not necessarily be maybe the first choice that immediately springs to mind for some people when they're thinking of these roles, but at the same time, they're all so specific because their personalities are all very different from one another. Yeah. So can you talk to me a little bit about, let's start off with like Winston Duke, first of all, like what qualities did he possess that made you go, he's the guy to play Will?
That's interesting. Yeah. I heard this and I felt like this, I found that this is very true. Like it's, sometimes is better just to cast someone by what they become rather than what they are throughout the whole movie,
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see that Winston was Will, the real Will, the Will that, without all the, armors, without all, the walls, he was the final Will when he was just like, delivering that monologue. So with this large figure, with like this big heart and like this very, immense, this big human being, and my job, like as director, was when I met him, it's just like, oh, what I need to do is just, I need to just hide it throughout the movie. I just need to, sit with him and you just come up with a way to just not show who he really is until the end of the movie. But it starts showing like a little bit of hints of it and drawing a little bit of who he is. But then to the end, he just, boom, he becomes like who he is.
You're referring to these explosions of emotion and passion
when he's like cares so much about Mike and he creates that experience and he's so difficult for him to just see them disappear, or some moments even of anger or some moments that all those moments of life that he's trying to just numb but he's not able to.
I was almost taken aback by hearing Benedict Wong's natural accent because I feel like he gets cast all the time where he has to hide his British accent.
Yeah.
Because his role, I think, is very interesting compared to the character of Will in this and how they bounce off of one another. Can you talk to me a little bit about, was that like a character that was added maybe later in the scripting process where you felt like Will needed to have somebody else there with him, or was that someone that was always part of the story?
Yeah, it was someone that was always part of the story. Mm-hmm. It was kind of for me, it was very important to have it because he's almost like Will, but other, side of Will is almost like his consciousness,
you get this nice dialogue between them as a result.
So he represents some part of this, system he's in, and we need that to make sense of things. And it's interesting you say about the accent, because even in the screenplay, I wrote this line, Asian man with British accent. And I didn't know it would be Benedict at the time, but it was very interesting because I'm Japanese Brazilian. I was born and raised in Brazil. And for me, it was like, okay, I'm I'm Brazilian, but people think I'm, you know, they say, oh, but you don't look Brazilian, all this stuff. So somehow I would like to give a little bit different perspective of what, mm-hmm. you know, exists. You know, there are Japanese Asians who have a Brazilian accent, you know. So there was something that I felt like, oh, it would be interesting to give a little more.
Yeah, totally. And the cast, I think, also reflects that level of diversity and inclusion as well, which is something that's really, really nice to see. The Walt Whitman poem at the end of the movie, Song of Myself. Can you talk to me about the significance of that? Well, because while watching the movie the first time, I didn't realize it was this poem. I ended up looking it up later and finding out and realizing, oh, okay, that's what that was. But then it just like kind of dawned on me then. Well, why that? What was so important and essential about that poem that stood out to you?
Dead Poets Society.
There you go. Okay.
And Yelp. And there's even a part of the it's the same. Yeah, actually, it's the same poem with the part of the Yelp.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, and even we record some parts with the Yelp and stuff. And I think we added some of those parts out. But yeah, I really love the movie. And funny thing is just like when the Sundance, you know, we got the World South Award, who gave the award was Ethan Hawke.
Oh.
Was in that scene with, which is very interesting.
And yeah, no, saying, that...
like, talking about Walt Whitman and everything. So it was.
Universe works in very mysterious ways, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
We always like to ask everyone at the end of our interviews here what they have coming up next. And mm-hmm. for you, this movie obviously premiered a very, very long time ago, it feels like, at this time. So the COVID delayed release has, I'm sure, given you time to not only sit with the movie a little bit more, but also possibly contemplate other projects. This being your mm-hmm. feature debut, I know myself and many others are anxious to know what you're going to work on next, because the response to this movie has just been sensational. So do you have anything coming up that you're able to share?
Not really. You know, I'm working on something. I'm just writing, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to, you know, I'm writing something that I want to, you know, film the same way I you know, we did with 9 days, that feels personal and feels like, you know, intimate. And and I'm just, you know, writing and seeing if I can get there, and we'll see. Hopefully, yeah.
Well, we're very, very excited for you. The film is called 9 Days. It will be out July 30th from Sony Pictures Classics, and then a wide release on August 6th. Edson, thank you so, so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Yeah, it was great talking to you.
All right. Best of luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with the writer and director for 9 Days, Edson Oda, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. 9 Days is being released by Sony Pictures Classics in theaters on July 30th, and then a wide release on August 6th. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it. No, right.